From the River Reporter newspaper, riverreporter.com. And from listeners like you.
Good evening. Welcome to the Local Edition, news and information, keeping you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole, and I hope you've been having a good Thanksgiving Day. Tonight, coming up, there are vultures in Narrowsburg, and that's a problem for some folks. Why are they there, and what are folks going to do? Rosie Starr has a special report from the home of one woman whose house is being troubled by these big birds. But first, it's Thursday, and every Thursday on the Local Edition, this is when we check in with Wayne County. We're a regular check-in with Wayne County. And on this Thursday, this Thanksgiving Thursday, we are checking in with Brian Smith, Joseph Adams, Jocelyn Kramer, all three Wayne County commissioners, who I assume are all having Thanksgiving dinner together right now. How are you all doing?
We're doing very, very good, and thank you for letting us have a little time here to spread the cheer and say happy Thanksgiving to all the folks out there who are your good listeners.
All right. Well, thanks for that. While we're being thankful, I'll say also just thanks for just being such a partner with Radio Catskill, for helping us just keep people connected in the area, making sure that we've got good information for the listeners that we have in Northeast Pennsylvania. It's a rural area. We know it's tough to keep people connected. So the fact that we've been able to maintain this partnership even through these crazy times, or because of the crazy times, it was a good thing that came out of the last year and a half. So I want to thank you all for that.
Well, you're welcome.
So, and continuing this Thanksgiving message, though, what does Wayne County have to be thankful for this year as you look back?
Well, so I'm going to try to give this is Brian Smith. I'm going to try to give everybody a chance to talk here a little bit. But, you know, I think Wayne County has a lot to be thankful for, but particularly right here in the county commissioner's office, we're thankful for the community that we are proud to be leaders of. I think that, you know, I'm particularly proud of the team of commissioners that we have here, our ability to work together, and, you know, and that in turn blesses the community. We take every issue that comes before us as an issue that we can take a look at, and a lot of times there's, you know, arguments internally here, a lot of homework that's done internally here, but ultimately all three of us are just, you know, dedicated to trying to do the best we can for the people we serve, and I think we achieved that very well here, and I'm proud of that. So I'm going to step down and allow Joe to speak a little bit here, and he's going to pass it off to Jocelyn. But again, we're very, very proud of the commissioners as a whole and what we can accomplish out of this office.
Joe? Thanks. I'm really super thankful for the strength and resolve of our community in a tough, tough pandemic year. I think our community has just come together and done the right things and has survived this. And so that strength and resolve, I think, is something to be very thankful for. Super thankful for the relationship that we also have as a county with our state, federal, and local governmental officials. We work hand in hand with Lisa Baker and Jonathan Fritz and Michael Pfeiffer and Congressman Cartwright and Senator Casey and Senator Toomey and the governor's office, as well as all of our townships and boroughs. I think we have a very strong, positive working relationship with all of them, and that's something that I'm really thankful for as well. Super proud to be able to announce that we've worked very hard over about a five-year period for a recovery to work project that's coming to fruition on the FCI Waymark property that's in collaboration with a lot of governmental departments, including the Department of Corrections. And the last thing for me, very, very much appreciative and proud of the completed escrow project, energy savings project that we did at the courthouse here, which took care of a lot of deferred maintenance and renovations issues that had been funded with savings from the savings on energy, as well as our debt restructuring, to not have an impact on the taxpayers to actually have to put any more tax on the rolls in order to pay for that. And lastly, the Hankins Dam project is something that we're just getting ready to put out, and really, really proud of having the ability to save an amazing historic structure in our county. Josh?
And Jason, I agree with everything my fellow commissioners have said. There's so much to be thankful for here in this region. Broadly speaking, we live in a spectacular corner of the United States. And Wayne County is still a tight-knit community with excellent working relationships, as we've been talking about, and opportunities here. Also, I'm extremely thankful. I'm still the new commissioner, learning my way around. But in the last couple of years, I have been so impressed with some of the staff here at the county who serve the residents of Wayne County. And it's something that I think the average person, you know, doesn't really fully understand. And maybe that's a good thing. But there are so many incredible employees here at the county. We have department heads that have worked through this pandemic and the crisis that's been presented to all of us. And I'm so thankful that we have a dedicated staff that are dedicated to each other, that are dedicated to our community to navigate this. And in many ways, Jason, we think we have implemented efficiencies that are going to serve Wayne County for the long run because of this crisis. So I'm extremely grateful to our responsive staff. I'm extremely grateful to Wayne Tomorrow Initiative. And I know your listeners will probably recognize Wayne Tomorrow because you've given us great opportunities to talk about that. But that is a commissioner-led initiative within the community designed to improve quality of life and economic opportunities. It has brought partners to a table every single first Friday of the month for nearly 9 or 10 years. And with those partners, we've been able to respond again to COVID. I can't imagine having gone through this pandemic without those partnerships, including some of the emergency food efforts that we did last year. And when I say we, I don't just mean we the commissioners or we the county. I mean all of these partners. So I'm extremely grateful for that, Jason. And I also just want to say we're also really grateful that you've given us an opportunity every Thursday to address your listeners and talk about some of the things that are happening here in Wayne County. And again, not just us, the county, but we've put some of our partners on the phone so that listeners, you know, and you've got listeners that might be new to the area. So they're learning more about what kind of neighborhood they've landed in, hopefully appreciating how fortunate they are to have found us and we to have found them. So we're also really grateful for that opportunity, Jason. I think that's been really wonderful.
Well, that's great. And while I've got all three of you, I feel like the last thing I'd like to ask you, each of you, to weigh in on, because you mostly were talking about, you know, what has come so far this year. We'll talk about what's coming in the year ahead, because you gave us some idea of a couple of things that are on the horizon that you're looking forward to in terms of that Waymart project and the dam project, which I think are both things that we'll want to follow up on in the coming year to learn more about and talk to listeners about. But could you, each of you, talk about what it is that you're looking forward to in the new year, whether it's for you personally or for the county?
So this is Brian again. I'll start, and I think, you know, probably near and dear to my heart, because I've come out of a 40-year career of milking cows as our dairy processing plant that we're trying to put in place. And that's been quite an effort with the background that we've already done and feasibility studies, and we're out trying to sell an RFP now. We actually do have some interest. Hopefully we get more interest and we can see that through to fruition, because I think that, you know, the salvation of the dairy industry and agriculture as a whole is something that we should be looking at in our own little communities, in the states that we live in, and also for our nation, because I believe that the ability to feed ourselves in this nation gives us the national security that we need to stay safe here. If you can't feed your own people, I've said before that we're then vulnerable for bad things to happen. But, you know, it's not just dairy, it's processing of meat, and it's an whole ag innovation center concept where, you know, we can put all these things together from producing product to getting them to market. So that's one of the projects that's near and dear to me. And again, I'll pass it to Joe.
Wayne Memorial Hospital, the continued growth, the rural health model has worked, you know, beautifully well. Really excited about, you know, congratulatory to Dave Hoffman for his retirement after 20 years of terrific leadership, and looking forward to Jim Pantanato's leadership as well. And I think that we're very fortunate to have a hospital that is growing, adding services, getting better. A state-of-the-art facility, and attracting and retaining good people. The last thing I would you know, continue to be very hopeful for next year is we have excellent public schools. They have done an amazing job over a long period of time. They're super dedicated, very community oriented, high achieving. And we look forward to the continuation of that, including partnering with them along the way from a standpoint of how we can attract, retain, keep people here who want to stay in the community, live here, work here. And I think that our schools are a big key in that as well. Josh?
Jason, and I'm going to chime in and share something that we have all been working extremely hard on. Something that will serve us better as a pandemic continues, but also long afterwards, is we have got to improve our broadband here in Wayne County. And I think finally that legislators across the state and nation realize that broadband is a necessity, and without it, rural communities lag far behind with our economic opportunities and our ability to educate students. So we know that a lot of priority has been given to broadband expansion for rural communities in the ARP money that's coming down the pike. But Wayne County has been especially fortunate to have received a recent generous donation from someone privately in the community. And that is allowing us to hire a broadband specialist that's going to help us navigate these opportunities and work with a tech committee that we've had in existence for years to move us forward much more quickly. And there's a lot happening on that front right now, and there's a lot for people to be hopeful about. I'm extremely hopeful about it. Cautiously optimistic, I think, is the best way to phrase it, Jason. But we got a lot of work happening on that front that I feel very positive about outcomes within the next year.
Okay, and we'll keep an eye on that, and I'm sure you'll keep us in touch on what happens next. It's a good note to go out on with a look back on what they're most thankful for and a little bit proud of in the past year, as well as a look ahead to the year that is coming. We've been speaking with Brian Smith, Joe Adams, Jocelyn Kramer, the three Wayne County commissioners here in our Thursday, Thanksgiving Thursday Wayne County check-in. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. When you get a chance, somebody pass the stuffing down this way, okay?
Right.
Wayne County Commissioners checking in with us here on the Thanksgiving. Of course, that interview was recorded a couple days before Thanksgiving, in full disclosure. But this is still the local edition. And hey, just a reminder, Radio Catskill Music Sale is coming up on Saturday. Annual WJFF Music Sale. And everybody's welcome to come out to the White Sulphur Springs Fire Hall, 11 a.m. on Saturday morning. But if you come, make sure you bring a mask, wear a mask, or be prepared to buy. We have some Music Sale themed masks for sale that'll be available as well. But it's going to be an indoor masked event, just so you're aware of that. And this is a local edition.
Your NPR station for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Radio Catskill, keeping you connected.
Well, Thanksgiving is a day when a lot of folks deal with a big old bird or two, and you may have done the same today, but not like this. It should never be like this. Have you heard about the vultures in Narrowsburg? You're about to. They've descended on the home of Lorraine Bowden's. Federal wildlife biologist Kenneth Prusser descended on her home as well. He went there last week to meet with local residents, and Rosie Starr was there too. And she brings us a special report right now, right here on the local edition.
On Thursday, November 18th, at the home of Lorraine Bowden's, Narrowsburg, New York, several neighbors and community members gathered on the subject of black vultures that are causing a disturbance in the town. District Supervisor Kenneth Prusser, federal biologist from the USDA Wildlife Services in New York, was invited to answer questions. Before he arrived, I took some comments from a few people that were gathered in Lorraine's kitchen area.
I'm Lorraine Bowden's. I live at 229 Bridge Street, Narrowsburg.
When I approached your home, I see there's very large black birds on your roof. And that's the reason why we're here. We're trying to find out why your house seems to be visited by these vultures. Tell me your version of this. What's the story with this?
Well, I don't know why they're here. They're hungry because, and they're also nosy because they've torn my back porch apart so many times. I've taken everything off of it. And if you look before you leave, you can see what they've done to my back porch. Mm-hmm. And they just are into everything. And I counted one day, the most I counted was 90. And they don't scare. And I have two outdoor cats, which don't come in. They're outdoor entirely. I have to sit with them a half an hour in the morning and at night and watch while they eat. Otherwise, the birds run them off and eat the cat food. And after the cats eat, I sweep up anything they left behind so that the birds don't come and eat. And that's another thing. You should be careful about sweeping around their dry poop because that's where the dust that carries whatever they can to make you sick.
Well, how long have you had this problem, and have they been identified as black vultures?
Oh, yeah, they've been identified by a lot of people. A lot of people have taken pictures. Now, this problem has just gotten bad since the last year or so. Before that, they were every place else. They were over on the Lutheran church. That lady had some trouble with them. And I don't know. I don't know what's the matter. They never leave. They used to be migratory, and they would come a while, a couple of weeks, and they'd be gone. But then all of a sudden, they're here, and they don't go anyplace. They're here in the morning, and they're here before dark. And sometimes in the afternoon, there'll be great flocks of them. And they share my yard and the neighbors. They wrecked her garden and stuff and the roof over here.
Do any of you have a problem with vultures?
My name is Paul Stankiewicz, resident of Narrowsburg. And I live in an apartment. And I do see the vultures. And they often wake me up at about 6 in the morning when they do their running start on my roof.
Yeah. Do you ever see what they're eating? Traditionally, they eat carrion.
I wonder why they're in this area. There's really no food source for them. There are, interestingly, dead deer across the river on the road that they have not found. It's a mystery, except for maybe the warmth coming off the roofs and the chimneys. Wondering why they're here.
I'm Barbara Leo. I'm the conservation chair at Northeast Pennsylvania Audubon Society, and we're out of Pennsylvania, of course. I'm interested in this subject because we have seen and counted these birds. We've seen them on our Christmas bird counts for the past several years. And it's a species that has started to move north. Their territory has been generally Maryland and south. But they've been hanging out in southern Pennsylvania, and now they're coming further north. I'd like to hear what he has to say about this. And they're protected birds, but there are ways in which they can be deterred from a roosting area.
We decided to meet Kenneth outdoors and eagerly listen to his comments on the subject of black vultures.
My name is Ken Prusser. I'm with USDA Wildlife Services. I'm an Eastern District Supervisor for the program.
Okay, well, thank you for coming to Narrowsburg.
It's considered a day roost, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this is a day roost. They have a night roost as well.
Yep.
So it's a loafing area where they come to loaf and to eat.
I notice that they're in the sunshine warming themselves. Is that typical? They'd rather stay in the sun than in...
Yeah, so they're warming themselves up just like we like to get warm, and they're here to catch the thermal, so they'd like to soar, and they use their sense of smell to locate the prey and or the roadkill or whatever source of food it might be that they're eating. So they like to warm up first, and then they catch the thermals with the rivers right here. So there's really good thermals that are here for a lot of them to soar. Yeah, I just did a quick count just from walking down the street. I just counted 95, yes, just here in town. I've been working with black vultures here in New York since about 2010. The population's increasing about 8 to 10% per year. Expanded its population all the way up to Albany, up to the River Valley.
Oh, really?
It's not a problem that's unique to here. To solve this problem, first is why are the birds here? These birds are here for a food source. They're obviously here to eat something in the village. So before we can do anything, whether it's a hazing program, harassment, the birds, we have to eliminate the food sources, and that's done through public education. And there's no feeding of cats outside. All the dumpsters have to be closed. No feeding of any dogs on porches, anything like that, because they're very susceptible to pet food. That's one of their favorite things to eat. So that before we do that, then we can talk about other methods. We'll probably reduce the numbers itself.
I saw them following my one old cat the other day, and I thought they were going to do something to him.
The vultures, they do cause some other damages in town. They do damage some shingles. They do pull windshield wipers off cars. Mm-hmm. They eat covers off gas grills. It's very common because they have very sharp claws to rip their carrying apart and a very sharp beak to tear the flesh. They do the same thing with any other type of material. It's like when they're dragging these rugs around, there's some odor that's in there. It's probably a rubber compound. If we're trying to just eliminate that altogether, the one thing to do is just stop the food source. That's what has to be done to stop the Pacific. And that's going to reduce population as well. It's a local issue. It's a town issue. To help each other, you got to sometimes modify what you're doing. That's what we recommend. There are other programs, if they don't work, such as a town-wide dispersal program. That would be in conjunction with local town officials and to disperse the birds using some non-lethal methods, using some pyrotechnics and lasers. But that's a ways down the road. You can see some visual deterrent here. That's Mylar. That's not really going to be that effective if there's a food source.
Homeowner Cheryl Papa comments on her property damage caused by black vultures.
They actually will pull the cushions off of my, chairs and things, and they will make holes in the cushions and pull the batting out. It has been a significant financial loss what they are doing. They've smashed pots. You know, I'm all for wildlife, right? But, I mean, this is an infestation. I mean, there was 80, 90 birds in the yard that we counted. This is not okay.
So we're looking at why are these birds here, right? They're here to eat. So they're here for the warm area. So first we've got to take away their food because these vultures are very resistant to types of control measures, whether that's be harassment, if they're still providing a food source. So to do that, any steps of a triangle period is to remove the habitat or the food source. Obviously, we can't remove the habitat. That would just be cutting all these trees down, so we can't do that. So we can look at the next step is to educate the town to limit the food sources. That's closing dumpsters, not feeding pets outside. That's the next step that I would recommend however it wants to be done.
Now, you mentioned several items, rugs and flashing windshield wipers. They're made of a component, like you say, rubber. Roofs have this material in them. I'm sure it's containing petrochemicals. Is it the roofing that material?
We're not sure. It's something with the rubber itself. There's something in the rubber compound. It's throughout the U.S. that we're dealing with this, and it's something in the rubber compound that there was windshield wipers, as I said, the shingles on roofs, rubber roofing. We're dealing with many issues of rubber roofing around throughout the Hudson Valley for that as well. There is another component of the program, of this harassment, and then as part of that, we use effigies, which are dead vultures which are hung upside down to disperse the roost. They are very effective in roosting areas and loafing areas. They're not effective in feeding areas. So that, once again, we got to go why the birds are here before we can step it up a little bit. So, and these are all on our website pages for our USDA Wildlife Services. If you do that and look at our black vultures, there's a technical paper there. So this is not unique to this Hudson Valley. There's other towns that are dealing with the exact same issue, and the recommendations are exactly the same, which I'm telling everybody today is we got to limit the food source.
Well, we are in the Delaware River Valley here, despite that it's hunting season now. I mean, deer are perennial here, and there's normally roadkill. From what I've read, these birds normally feed on carrion.
Yeah, that's part of their diet, just like any vulture. That's their main food source is carrion. But they also are attracted to other human food sources, such as waste that you throw away in a landfill, anything food source you throw in your dumpster, any pet food. So, and also they eat the cat feces as well. If a person wanted to try to harass these birds off their roof, you can use a pen laser during dawn or dusk that will disperse them as well. It's a visual deterrent. It's just like playing with your cat.
Here is Barbara Leo from the Northeast Pennsylvania Audubon Society.
Yeah, but, you know, lasers poked in somebody's eye are dangerous.
Yeah. Like I said, you don't shine it on the bird. You just shine it on the trees that they're in or the roof that they're in. Like a roof like this, if you want to try to keep off your roof like that one there, you can put up a bird wire, which would prevent the birds from roosting right on the peak, which is generally what they'd like to do.
Right.
So they're just going to go find somewhere else where they can go roost. Because they like to be on top. You see, if you look around here where all the birds are, they're all on the high peak of the roof.
Mm-hmm. Where are they breeding, do you know?
They're breeding throughout New York. We have documentation throughout New York. Don't have any. This, I believe New York, maybe Pennsylvania has a breeding population. I'm not sure about how far north they go. I think New York is about as far north as they are right now.
Right. What kind of structures are they breeding in?
They like to nest in on cliffs or abandoned barns.
Broken down factories and things of that nature is what they've been looking at as far as that.
So as far as food sources go, this used to be a Chinese restaurant, and there was like a cooking oil reservoir in the back, and they would get into the garbage cans frequently. The restaurant closed. We have our garbage cans in a wooden shed now that's locked.
Okay.
And the oil reserve is gone. So I would add to the list, besides the pet food and all that jazz, to work with the restaurants, too, to make sure that their food, scraps, and waste are secure.
Yeah. Any of these commercial food facilities or to have the dumpsters closed, that's just great for all wildlife control, whether that's bears or whether that's raccoons.
It sounds like we need more details on this cooperative agreement.
Let's get some public education about there and see to limit the food sources that are available. This problem did not occur overnight. Mm. It's not going to be solved overnight. We start with the why are the birds here, whether it's a habitat or food source. Then we try the non-lethal component of hazing and putting up effigies.
Is there any danger that we can catch anything from these birds? I've read a couple different articles, and I've spoken to a vet from up in Cornell, and he was the one that told me don't sweep the dry poop because that it's in the dust, the germs. It goes in the dust, and then you can get it.
Wear your mask.
Yes, wear your mask.
Every day. Yeah, every day.
And I've been sweeping it all along because I sweep up after the cats. I didn't know it.
I've done a little research, and just so everyone knows, they are protected under the Migratory Bird Act of 1918.
You are correct, so that's why when we do this, put the effigies up or have to remove vultures using lethal control, it's under a permit issued by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and New York State DEC. So there's two levels of protection here for migratory birds in New York. It's going to take a while to get everybody educated to reduce the food that's available to them.
As a work in progress, Kenneth Prusser recommends spending 3 to 6 months with public education to jumpstart a solution to the invasive problem of black vultures in Narrowsburg. Wildlife biologist Kenneth Prusser can be reached by email. His contact is kennethjprusser@usda.gov. For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr.
Thank you so much, Rosie, for producing that report for us tonight. That's going to do it for the local edition tonight. News and information that keeps you connected in the Catskills. I've been your host, Jason Dole. I hope you had a great holiday day. And that's going to do it for me for tonight. But come back tomorrow evening at 6:30. Local edition will be back with Patricio Rabayo in this seat hosting for you. Thanks again for listening.
WJFF, Jeffersonville. Public radio for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. Radio Catskill.
The hamlet of Calicoon transforms into a Victorian holiday wonderland for Dickens on the Delaware. Saturday, December 11th from noon to 8. Caroling, horse and buggy rides, theater and dance performances, shopkeepers dressed in Victorian garb, and more. Dickens on the Delaware, Saturday, December 11th. More information on the Dickens on the Delaware Facebook event page. Paid for by the Calicoon Business Association.
Well, I'm John Bachman. Been helping with music sale. We've got a lot of good stuff this year, some great old stereo equipment, turntables, good treasures. Just look for bargains. There's a ton of great stuff here. The main records are great. Some really, really nice condition stuff. Get here on the early side so you can join the fray and have fun looking at records.
The WJFF Music Sale. Doors open at 11. Sale goes till 3 this Saturday at the White Sulphur Springs Fire Hall.
WJFF Jeffersonville.